Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Luther is known as a preacher, and some of his sermons actually made their way into books. They made their way into what we would probably call commentaries nowadays, but they were based upon the sermons of Martin Luther. And Luther had an opportunity to preach a series of sermons on the famous Sermon on the Mount, a sermon on the sermon. And that's the subject of our ongoing series as we continue Martin Luther and the Reformation, part 36, on this Thursday afternoon with Dr. Ken Sherb, looking at just a few verses initially of Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount. Dr. Ken Sherb is pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. He has a PhD in history from Ohio State University and formerly served as a theology professor at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and as an assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Ken, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. I'm going to rub my feet real vigorously on the rug here, and to give you a static shock, I'm going to reach out and touch your ear.
We are going to be talking about...
Now, it sounds like I'm that close, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I'm 170 miles away, folks. This is the wonder of radio.
We're going to be talking about Luther's book, The Sermon on the Mount, which is really based upon a series of sermons that he preached kind of as a vacancy preacher. How did Luther esteem this particular writing of his?
Luther thought that this was a very good writing. He talked about his sermons on John 14, 15, and 16 at times as the best book he had ever written. But he said, well, the Sermon on the Mount is also good. And that's an important thing for us to think about as we begin a series on Luther's Sermon on the Mount. I mean, the fact is Luther's sermons were preached usually from outlines by him. We don't have a lot of manuscripts of Luther sermons. And people had to take these things down. So there's always the question, did the guy taking it down take it down right? And if it was edited then for publication, as this was, did the editor import some of his own ideas? We have Luther's own words looking back on it that this book turned out well. So we have confidence that this, if it's not exactly the words Luther spoke from the pulpit, it's at least very close, and it's got his approval, as it were.
What was the occasion of these sermons?
Well, Luther was basically serving as a visiting, or not even visiting, a vacancy preacher. John Bugenhagen was the pastor at the city church in Wittenberg, as well as being Luther's colleague on the university faculty. But Bugenhagen, very often, was sort of deployed out to organize the Reformation in other places. And shortly after the Lutheran Party returned from the Diet of Augsburg, and Luther got back from his little exile at the Coburg in the fall of 1530, Bugenhagen was off. I mean, he left in late October to go to Lübeck and organize the Reformation there. And so from late October of 1530 until late April of 1532, Bugenhagen's gone. That's like almost exactly a year and a half. And guess who's holding the bag preaching while Bugenhagen, the pastor, is gone? Well, Luther's picking up a lot of the slack. So he's picking up the slack, among other things, in the Wednesday sermons, where they would have a continuous reading and a continuous preaching through the Gospel of Matthew. And so these sermons are Luther's sermons on Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount, from the time when Bugenhagen was away.
Luther also has something to say about the text upon which he meditates here in these sermons and in this work. That is, he does not approve of how the texts have been treated previous to this.
Yeah, actually, when the sermons were edited for publication, Luther did add a preface for the whole sermonic commentary. And in this preface, he puts it pretty strongly. He says Satan has not found a single text in the scriptures that he has more shamefully distorted and into which he has imported more error and false teaching than this very one. Now, he's talking about the Sermon on the Mount, and particularly chapter 5 of Matthew, especially about the last half of the chapter where Jesus goes on and on and says, "You have heard that it was said, but I say to you, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you." Luther points out that the Roman Catholics of his day thought especially about that section of the Sermon on the Mount as really not giving commands, but advice. These were what they called evangelical counsels. In other words, if you want to do more, if you want to be all you can be as a Christian, as it were, these are the additional levels to which you need to reach. So don't just refrain from physical adultery. You should try to restrain your thoughts so that you don't even look at a woman with lust in your heart. But that's not incumbent upon everybody, the Roman Catholics said. That's for the people who want to aspire to special levels of godliness, as it were. So really, it amounts to saying that the Sermon on the Mount is truly not giving commands there, not trying to interpret God's commands and show the true intent of them, which is what Jesus is really doing, but rather just giving kind of advice. Now, the Anabaptists, on the other hand, and the Anabaptists are very much on Luther's mind as he preaches these sermons in 1530 and 31 and 32, said, "Well, okay, it says you should not swear, so, you know, don't swear at all, ever, under any circumstances, even if you are in a court of law, not even, you know, to benefit your neighbor should you ever swear. You shouldn't hold private property. You shouldn't hold public office. You shouldn't get involved in those things." Jesus says, turn the other cheek. You shouldn't defend yourself. Christians should not serve as soldiers in the military, etc., etc. So that was the Anabaptist take on this. And Luther says, we've really got to thread the needle here, because on the one hand, we've got the suppression of good works, which God truly commands, which is what he said the Roman Catholics were doing, or we have the invention of new false good works, like don't ever swear even in court, don't hold public office, don't go into the military, which is what the Anabaptists were saying.
Luther makes a little bit of hay from Jesus opening his mouth and Jesus as a public preacher. What does he say about those opening verses?
Yeah, he says that every preacher needs to be like Christ, very publicly opening his mouth and beginning to hold forth. And again, he's got the Anabaptists on the brain. He is criticizing, and he goes on at some length, commenting on the first couple of verses in Matthew 5, criticizing what he called the sneak preachers. No, he says, if a preacher is unwilling to enter the pulpit and hold forth publicly and noticeably, then he should just sit down and say nothing. Now, Luther immediately adds, just so he's not misunderstood, that he's not saying that you shouldn't teach the word privately in your home. In fact, he says the head of every family in his house is like a minister or bishop over his household, and he has the command to supervise what they learn and to be responsible for them. But you have no right to do this outside your own household. And he was very concerned about the Anabaptist sneak preachers coming in where they were unbidden, uncalled, trying to gather a little clique of people around them secretly, or at least semi-secretly. And Luther says, nope, we should have none of that. And of course, the Augsburg Confession had said back in 1530, shortly before Luther preached this sermon, that no one should preach publicly unless he has a regular call, or ordentlicher Beruf. I mean, he has to be called in the orderly way. So Luther's kind of reflecting on that as he begins this sermon.
It's also Christ's first recorded sermon there in Matthew. What did Luther make of this?
Well, you know, Luther kind of likes to step back at times like these and just think about what's painfully obvious, but maybe isn't so obvious to people. this is, at least in Matthew, the first recorded sermon of Christ, and at any great length, probably in all the Gospels, it's the first recorded public utterance. Wouldn't it be wonderful, if you didn't have it already, to know what he said, what lengths people would go to, what fortunes they would offer, just to know what those first words were out of Christ's mouth? And he says, the fact is, now, we're just so sated on the word, and we take it as so commonplace that we have it available, and we can hear it preached quite regularly, that we just sort of say, ho-hum, you know, we take it for granted. What he says is, whoever has the grace to recognize this as the word of God rather than the word of man will also think of it more highly and will never grow sick and tired of it. So Luther says this in commenting on the very first words out of Christ's mouth, blessed are the poor in spirit. And of course, he goes on and talks about how precious that word is, that that is the first one. But that we have any word from Christ's mouth is a wonderful thing.
It's part 36 of our weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. Today, Luther on the first few verses of the Sermon on the Mount. Dr. Ken Sherb is our guest. At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a confessional Lutheran. TheCLCC.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we continue our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation, Part 36. Luther on the Sermon on the Mount, dealing with the first few verses of Luther's treatment there. Dr. Ken Sherb is our guest. Luther writes in part this, Ken. I want to know what he means by this. Christ does not come like Moses or a teacher of the law with demands, threats, and terrors, but in a very friendly way with enticements, allurements, and pleasant promises.
Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Of all the things, when Christ begins to preach, that very first word out of his mouth there in Matthew 5 in this Sermon on the Mount is blessed. He doesn't talk about people being cursed. He doesn't come brandishing some sort of a sword, either literal or figurative, to go after opponents. This, of course, as Luther implies very often throughout his commentary, is contingent upon recognizing that Christ is talking to his disciples. He's talking within earshot of the larger crowd. They're out there and they can kind of overhear this. But he's talking directly to the disciples right in front of them, and he's saying, you are blessed. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It's kind of like when a pastor gives a children's sermon in church. He's talking directly to those kids. The others, the adults out there in the crowd, they can listen to that. They can benefit from it. But nobody's going to elbow their neighbor and say, well, that's awfully childish. I mean, he's using pretty childish words and everything. Well, of course he is. He's talking directly to the kids. Here, Christ is talking directly to his disciples, and he's talking to them about how blessed they are.
But he also says, what Christ says here is, he says, devastating to human reason.
Yeah, it's sweet to Christian ears. And yet it is devastating to human reason. See, there is a kind of a backspin here that those people out in the crowd might just sort of wince at, because he's saying, who's blessed? The poor? The spiritually poor? Luther notes that from Old Testament days, the Jews were firmly persuaded that if a man is successful, then that's the sign of God's favor. That's the sign that that man has a gracious God. And of course, that's the whole point in the book of Job. Job's friends figure that Job has all these problems, that all these calamities have befallen him in such short order, because Job must have done something terribly, terribly wrong. As long as Job was prospering, that was a sign that he was in good with God. But now, oh, what in the world has he done? And they keep needling him. And of course, we know as readers of the book of Job that the reason why Job is suffering the way he is not because of anything he's done, but because of the little conversation and arrangement that God and the devil have made that we know about from the first couple of chapters of the book. Well, Luther says this is a common way of thinking, and he doesn't limit it just to Old Testament era Jews. He says, think about in our day, the Turks, they're just gobbling up territory. Remember, the previous year, 1529, the Turks had made it to the gates of Vienna and laid siege to the place. And they took all of that military success as a sign that God, their God, was smiling upon them. We must be right. Our God must be the true God. We're doing so well. That was the kind of message that they had for everybody in Europe. Or, Luther says, think about the papacy. You see this kind of thing in the papacy. We are so successful and we're doing so well and we've done so well for so long a time. God certainly must be on our side. So Luther says, in short, this, you know, this kind of thinking that if I'm prospering, that's a sign of God's favor, and if I'm not, then, well, I got to watch out. It's the greatest, Luther says, and most universal belief or religion on earth. And this is not the only place where you'll see Luther kind of commenting together about the Jews, the Turks, and the papacy. It's not an exclusive comment on those three, though. He's taking them, as he very explicitly says here, as typifying this universal religion of the human heart. And yet, this is not what Christ is teaching. In fact, the first thing out of Christ's mouth is the exact opposite. He says you can be blessed in heaven even though you're poor right here and now.
So what does he do with the poor, and blessed are the poor in spirit?
Well, he calls attention to that word in spirit or spiritually, that this is the spiritually poor we're talking about. He makes it clear, again, he's trying not to be misunderstood, he's a good preacher. He says, having money in and of itself is not a sin. And on the other hand, no one is blessed, Luther says, just because he's poor and he's a beggar. In fact, remember, we talked about this when we were going through the life of Luther. Whenever the Reformation kind of took hold in a place, one of the things you kind of saw as an evidence of that was that public begging was abolished because it was no longer a spiritually meritorious work either to beg or to give to a beggar. Public welfare systems were put in instead. So Luther says it's not poverty of money in your pocket or the lack thereof that we're talking about. What we're talking about is being spiritually poor, which is to say, don't set your confidence and trust on temporal things. Do not hang your heart on things like that. Live, Luther says, in this world the way you would if you were staying overnight someplace. If you go to your relatives and stay a night or two with them while you're away from home, how do you think of yourself? You don't think of this place where you're sleeping as your room, your bed, with your possessions there on the nightstand. You know you're not going to stay there, in fact. These things are not your permanent possession. You are, to use the scriptural words, a stranger and a pilgrim here in this world. And that's the way the spiritually poor have to think of themselves.
So he says we should evaluate things on the basis of the heart. What does he say there?
Well, he goes on, we should not be over-concerned whether we have something or nothing, much or little. And whatever we have in the way of possessions, we should always treat as though we did not have it, being ready at any time to lose it and always keeping our hearts set on the kingdom of heaven. Luther kind of rides that term, kingdom of heaven, here. Of course, Jesus also sometimes calls it the kingdom of God. And that's sometimes pointed out as a difference characteristically between the way Matthew writes it up and the other gospel writers write it up. Luther thinks the kingdom of heaven is particularly, although not exclusively, a reference to our heavenly home after life in this world has finished.
And I think you mentioned this a moment ago, but Luther basically says, look, don't be like the Anabaptists. They are wary of things like property and home and possessions.
Yeah, just because you are treating this as your temporary dwelling, you're a stranger and a pilgrim here, doesn't mean that you become careless about the things in this world. He says, we are not to run away from property, house, home, wife, and children, wandering around the countryside as a burden to other people. This, he says, is what the Anabaptist sect does. In our heart, we should be able to leave house and home, wife and children. Think about the end of A Mighty Fortress. You know, take they our life, our wife, goods, fame, child, and wife, you know, all of that. Let it all be gone. They have nothing won. Luther says here, if you are able to do this, if you're able in your heart to forsake all these things, then you have forsaken everything in the sense that your heart is not taken captive by those things.
What is the content of the kingdom of heaven, according to Luther, when he looks at Matthew?
Well, again, Luther is thinking particularly of that heavenly home that Jesus promises, that eternal crown. And he says, you know, if we really wanted to be Christians, this would stir us. And frankly, doesn't it stir us, especially when we see the trouble of this world and the difficulties of being a Christian day to day in this world, filled as it is, filled as we are with sin and problems and temptations and offenses? Boy, wouldn't we long for that blessedness of the kingdom of heaven?
Luther says something here as we draw toward a close, at least in this little section, that flies in the face of all practical wisdom about preaching today in the 21st century. Luther says this sermon does the world no good and accomplishes nothing for it. What does he mean?
Yeah, well, remember, he's pointing out the fact that Christ is preaching to those disciples right in front of him, his followers. The crowd is out there. They're able to kind of overhear this if they want to, but he's speaking directly to those who are his. And he says, look, the world does not see things this way. The world certainly does not think that somebody who is poor in any sense is blessed, because the world insists upon its own being right. It refuses to believe a thing, Luther says. It must have it before its very eyes. Show me the proof. Show me the money, is what people would say in the world.
So finally, Ken, how does Luther wrap up this first small section of his thoughts on the Sermon on the Mount?
Well, with this first beatitude, which is in a way like the first commandment in the Decalogue, you know, from the rest flow from it, in a way the rest flow from this one, he says this first point is, whoever wants to have enough here and hereafter, let him see to it that he is not greedy or grasping. Let him accept and use what God gives him. Then he will have paradise and even the kingdom of heaven here. already.
Dr. Ken Sherb is pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. He has a PhD in history from Ohio State University, formerly served as a theology professor at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and as an assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Ken, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be back in the saddle here.
Folks, in addition to the daily dose of Reformation theology you get here on Issues Etc., you can also pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development with the Master of Arts in Theology program at Concordia University, Irvine, California. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Find out more at cui.edu/theology. That's cui.edu/theology, Concordia University, Irvine's Master of Arts in Theology program. When we come back, we're going to talk about an open letter to Church of England bishops to accept gay members and leaders with Bishop Keith Ackerman. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.